The second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs are underway, and one series is already done. One series I was very wrong with. One series is, well, getting a little heated, and the other one is what we expected, and honestly, kind of the lowest on the totem pole, in my opinion. We've got all that and some other news around the National Hockey League on episode 134 of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. Let's go. We're back, baby. Episode 134. Kyle Grimard, your host, as always, of the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. You can listen online on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Go to Anchor Music, wherever really you get podcasts. That's where we have our platforms on. Follow me on social media, Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. We're starting a new series of the Hockey Writers where we're doing player grades and breakdowns from the Vancouver Canucks from this past season. The first one is out. You can go check out my piece at the Hockey Writers on Tucker Poolman, Brad Richardson, and Brad Hunt, and we'll slowly work our way up towards the entire roster of the Canucks and see what they have coming forward for the 2022-23 season, because no, they are not in the playoffs, but we've got a lot of other teams that are in the playoffs, and actually one team now that's not in the playoffs. We'll talk about the Panthers and Lightning series and how it's already over. The Battle of Alberta. I was, you know what, it's the one thing I don't like about certain podcasts is that sometimes, you know, when people go on, they don't come on and they don't correct themselves. They say they've never really made mistakes before. And I got to be honest, the Oilers are hot right now and I was wrong about them. We'll break down that series as well. The Avalanche and Blues, that one getting heated. Avalanche take a 2-1 series lead, but it's the Nazem Kadri story and what he has overcome and why I'm so proud of him. It's why I'm also rooting for them as well. And then the Rangers and Canes, and I got to be honest with you, it's kind of what we expected in the series, and it's probably the least exciting, and despite the fact that there was a sweep in one of the series as well. But anyways, we'll get into that a little bit later on. Let us start with the Battle of Alberta. After dropping the first game 9-6 to the Calgary Flames in what I thought was going to be a wild series, but if there was a game Edmonton needed to win, it was that one. Edmonton has come back. They've won two straight games. Now have a 2-1 series lead. They play game 4 tonight at home. Listen, I got to be honest here. I don't like it when, you know, when you listen to sports shows, you listen to podcasters or personalities, anything like that, and they have a take. And when they're wrong about the take, they don't acknowledge it or they don't clarify certain things. You know what I mean? Like, they don't bring it up. And that's what I feel like. Nobody really takes accountability for when they're wrong about something. All year long, I've been saying that I don't believe in the Oilers. I didn't believe in their goaltending. I didn't believe in their defense. I still kind of don't, to an extent. But playoffs, sometimes you kind of throw things out the window. It's all about who gets hot, how you're playing as a unit. And I was wrong about Edmonton. I'm wrong about the fact that Mike Smith is playing some really good hockey right now. I'm wrong about the fact that despite outside of Darnell Nurse, I do not trust a single defender on that Oilers team. And yet here they are. They're halfway to the Stanley Cup in terms of wins. And they're looking good doing it. Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, Zach Hyman, who never really performed in the playoffs with the Leafs, goes to the Oilers and he's got what, 7 goals in 9 or 10 games or whatever the case may be. You got to give him props. And Connor McDavid, listen, Connor McDavid, he might not win the Hart Trophy, but this dude is, if he needed to already, cemented himself as the greatest player on earth and honestly is creeping into that category of greatest player we've ever seen play. I know some people have already had that take before, but you know, when you're a little hesitant with the Gretzky thing, listen, people were hesitant to say that Alexander Ovechkin was going to be the greatest goal scorer of all time. It was only up until a few years ago that people were even having that conversation. I was early on that bandwagon. McDavid's also only, what, 24? This dude has got a lot of leeway left to go. But he hit a stat that nobody in the history of this sport has ever done before. Ready for this? Connor McDavid is the first player ever to record multi-point games in 9 of his first 10 playoff games in a single postseason run. He has collected, let me say that again, multi-point games in 9 of his first 10 games to start a postseason run. Wayne Gretzky hasn't done that. Bobby Orr hasn't done that. Gordie Howe hasn't done that. Mario Lemieux hasn't done that. Sidney Crosby hasn't done that. Nobody has done that before. And here McDavid is at 23 and really what, his second or third playoff stint? Blowing the roof off of it. Remember last year, the Oilers got swept in the bubble. He had no penalties called for him or against him. And everyone was like, well, does McDavid have a kryptonite in the playoffs? Now, they did make a second round run back in, I believe, 2017 or 2018, and they lost to the Sharks in 7. But if you remember, that was the Leon Draisaitl show. He was the leading scorer on the team, and he was the one that really came out and was like, oh, he's the top 5 player in the NHL based on this. And he's just continued to do so since then. This is McDavid just cementing himself. Like, I think there's conversations for who's 2, who's 3, who's 4 and 5. But I think in terms of 1, and I know people are going to say the whole Sidney Crosby thing because he's won 3 Stanley Cups. It takes a lot more than one player to win a cup. Remember, Sidney Crosby didn't win the MVP their first time around. That was Evgeny Malkin. Right? I think he won it their third time around, but it was like Malkin one time. Kessel had a big playoff run in their second cup run. Right? It takes a village, basically. But eventually star players come out and they make their mark and they kind of cement themselves as, you know, they don't just do it in the regular season. They do it in the playoffs as well. And I feel like that's what we're seeing now from Connor McDavid. And I was going to say finally, but I feel like he has shown up. I just think now he's showing up to the potential of what he has done in the regular season and has now transferred it over onto his playoff form. And he's taken it to another level. Now, I will say this. He might need 50 for the Oilers to win the cup, but he also might do it. He could legit do it. He's at 23 through 10 games. The most amount of games you can play is 28, right? 7 game series, 4 series to win the cup, 28. 7 times 4 is 28. And we'll see if this one even goes 7 games. But there's a real possibility he could do it. And if you ever had any doubt who was the best player, or if he wasn't the best player, I think this just answered all your questions about him. For the Flames, Matthew Tkachuk came out and, he basically came out and said what everybody was thinking. So one guy on that team is basically beating us. Now, I don't want to discredit anything that Leon Draisaitl is doing, because he's having a great playoff run, too. He had 4 assists, by the way, last game in the 4-1 win. He had 4 assists. He contributed to all 4 of the goals. Zach Hyman's had a strong playoff. Evander Kane had a hat trick. Mike Smith bounced back in a big way. But, I mean, Tkachuk's not wrong, right? When you know everything, like Draisaitl can make his own magic, but you know it starts with 97. We're not disputing that other players aren't contributing. But I think one of the reasons that they're contributing is make somebody else beat you. So in game 2, right, McDavid bounced off Nikita Zadorov, then gets a pass back from Draisaitl, goes in and scores. On that play, Erica Branson took the winger instead of McDavid. He had a choice. After McDavid bounced off the hit, there were 2 Oilers players, and Erica Branson did not go to Connor McDavid. Well, 10 out of 10 times, that's the wrong move. You went to the other winger. Draisaitl hit McDavid back. He was wide open. He absolutely danced Markstrom and finished off the beautiful give-and-go play with him. And, like, I just feel like the Flames think that they can just play their regular style or they can run and gun because they've got a good goalie and good defense. And sorry, he's the best player in the world. You got to adjust for him. So if the Flames don't switch this up, this thing could be over in five. I thought the Flames were going to come across this series and just wipe it, especially after game one when the Oilers put six in and lost. I said if that was the game for the Oilers to win. And since then, the Oilers have only gotten better. Mike Smith had a shutout game two and then one goal against in game three. The Flames got to play a lot more defensive, shut things down in the neutral zone. Do not let the Oilers just walk in and have their way. And credit to the Oilers for finding a way to allow themselves to play the game that they're playing. But if the Flames don't figure it out, you know, they're going to be going home a lot earlier than a lot of people anticipated. All right, let's move on to the next series here. And you know what's funny? A week ago on this podcast, we were talking about the breakdown of the Florida Panthers versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. Today, we're talking about the sweep of the Florida Panthers against the Tampa Bay Lightning.
39 saves for Andre Vasilevsky. Here's Bogosian towards the net. Got the puck. Pavelski. It's in. They score. Hard work by Maroon down low. And the Tampa Bay Lightning take a 1-0 lead.
Patrick Maroon breaking the deadlock in the third period. Andre Vasilevsky makes 49 saves. And in his last seven series clinching games, Andre Vasilevsky has six shutouts, one goal against, and Tampa is on to the Eastern Conference Finals. Let's start with Tampa for a second before I get to Florida and all that. Championship teams, man. Championship teams find a way. They don't break. Maybe they bend a little bit. Not in this series, man. Steven Stamkos came out and said, we didn't want to waste that game Vasilevsky played. They only had like 24 shots on net, and they end up bouncing them 2-0 in this game. The crazy thing to me is the fact that they didn't have Braden Point all series. I don't think anybody realized that until Tampa won, and everyone was kind of shook by it. Like, oh yeah, a few people probably guessed that Tampa beat Florida. I don't think anybody would have guessed it would have been a sweep. And I don't think anybody would have guessed it would have been a sweep, along with the fact that they wouldn't have Braden Point, one of their best playoff performers, the entire series. Tampa wiped the floor with Florida. Let's not sugarcoat this in any way. Apparently the Panthers controlled 51.8% of the expected goals, and they carried the puck around 57.9% of the time through 5-on-5. Vasilevsky was just better than Bobrovsky. But let's not talk about, analytics is the main factor in why Florida, quote, should have won. There's a lot of things when you watch the games, like scoring chances, like capitalizing on your opportunities. You want to know why the Florida Panthers are out? Because through two series of the Stanley Cup playoffs, they scored one power play goal. One. You can shoot the puck all you want, but Tampa Bay capitalized on scoring opportunities. They got good goaltending, great goaltending. Let's not diminish what Vasilevsky did. And their big boys stepped up when they were missing a player. They've now won 10 consecutive series dating back to their first playoff run a few years ago. And in their seven series clinching games, Vasilevsky and the Lightning have shut out their opponents six out of the seven times. The one game happened last round against the Toronto Maple Leafs. We will get to them in a second. They now await the winner of the Carolina Hurricanes and New York Rangers series. We'll talk about them a little bit later on as well. Let's move on to Florida here. You know, it's funny, John Cooper came out and said that, you know, people are going to sit here and say, what happened to Florida? No, a bounce here, a bounce there, and it's 2-2, and we're going to Florida at some point. It's funny, I think he's just being nice, which is so funny, because last series against Toronto, you know what's funny about John Cooper? Here's my hypothesis and theory on John Cooper. when John Cooper is winning, he's like the nicest guy in the world. But he doesn't like losing. Hits a sore spot on him. And it's great as a competitive head coach in the National Hockey League. But Toronto went out and beat Tampa game one, 5-0. John Cooper comes out, doesn't credit Toronto for being a good team, doesn't credit their effort, says, we gave it to them. You know, they didn't even have to be good to beat us tonight. But as soon as they win, right, Cooper's like, oh, you know, that's a hell of a team in Florida. That's a hell of a team in Toronto. Got a couple bounces here and there. And, like, I love it. Like, I love the fact that he, like, I think everybody has a little bit of sore loser in them. You know, I don't think there's a good loser. I think you can take it better and show it better for sure. But at the same time, nobody likes losing, especially in professional sports. I just think it's so funny that John Cooper went out and basically gave Florida all this credit. But I don't want to sugarcoat this in any way. Like, Florida got swept after kind of struggling to take out Washington. Now you'll sit here and be like, well, Kyle, Florida beat Washington in 6 games. Right. The last 3 games, Florida had to come back because they were down against Washington, and Washington had a goalie controversy and couldn't keep the puck out of their own net. Washington was easily the weakest team in the Eastern Conference, and it was, well, given that fact, also because they were the lowest seeded team. So that makes sense. But Tampa, after getting pushed to 7 games and on the brink of elimination against the Toronto Maple Leafs, come out and just sweep Florida. Let's also not bury this lead under the rug as well. The story comes out about the Florida Panthers coming out of a strip club at 3 a.m. the day of their elimination game. Their first elimination game in these playoffs. And a multitude of players walk out of a strip club at 3 a.m. You know, I tweeted this. I said, imagine if any Canadian market, this story comes out. Like, imagine Calgary, Gaudreau, Tkachuk, and Lucic seen leaving a strip club. The Oilers, imagine Draisaitl, Nurse, and Kane seen exiting a strip club 3 a.m. the day of game 3 or 4. Imagine Montreal or Toronto. Imagine Toronto. But because it's Florida, it's like nobody batted an eye. People made a bigger deal, which, by the way, this is a big deal, that the Panthers scratched 31 goal scorer Anthony Duclair in exchange for 42-year-old Joe Thornton. People made a bigger deal about that. And it's a big deal. But it goes to show what the culture and what the media is like, that people talked about scratching a player, one player for another, over the fact that team members went to a strip club the night before their biggest game of the season. So here's where Florida's kind of screwed. If they buy out Keith Yandle, that's going to be $3 million on their cap. Alexander Barkov's contract kicks in, and that jumps up another $4.1 million. Carter Verhaeghe's contract kicks in, and his contract will jump up $3.16 million. That 31-goal scorer that you scratched, Anthony Duclair, is now a free agent, and I got to be honest, if I'm Anthony Duclair, there's not a chance in hell I'm going back to Florida. If I'm Duclair, I'm thinking, you're going to scratch me in possibly my final game of the season, in the biggest game of the season, for Joe Thornton. I get Joe Thornton's trying to chase the championship. I get it. But you couldn't have scratched anybody else for Thornton. You had to scratch Anthony Duclair. I think that's absolutely, absolute insanity to me. And Florida gave up Owen Tippett, couple firsts, seconds, fourth for Ben Chiarot as UFA, Claude Giroux who's a UFA. Ah. Yeah, they won a playoff series. People make fun of the this is their first playoff series win since 1996. But congratulations on the playoff series win. You did not win a single game in round two. Which is where I want to bring this over. And I know that, I know people are trying to listen right now because a lot of people freaked out when the Toronto Maple Leafs lost to the Tampa Bay Lightning in seven. Right, there's news about blowing up the core, trading one of their key players, firing the head coach, GM. Does it not put it in perspective a little bit? What Toronto did to Tampa round one? Like, Toronto had them on the ropes. And if you've listened to the last couple episodes, four instances in which goals were essentially decided by calls, that series could have gone either way. It's also the second straight playoffs in which the team that Toronto was eliminated by swept the team after them. Right? Last year, Montreal took seven games to take out Toronto. Next round, they sweep the Jets. This year, Toronto loses in seven to Tampa. Tampa then sweeps Florida. I'm just saying, everyone in Toronto, the Toronto media's, blow it up, fire everybody, trade all your core pieces, get draft picks and start over. Guys, the Florida Panthers were at a strip club till 3 in the morning, the day of their elimination game, and nobody is saying blow it up. Alexander Barkov did not show up in these playoffs. Jonathan Huberdeau did not show up in the second round. Nobody in Florida is saying trade these players. It goes to show how close Toronto really is, and honestly, how far away Florida is, in my opinion. I've said it before, I'll say it again to people. I think Sergei Bobrovsky is not a playoff performer, and he is signed for $10 million for the next God knows how many years. He is a career 314 goals against average in the playoffs, and I think he's barely at .900 save percentage. You know who has better numbers in the playoffs than Sergei Bobrovsky? Jack Campbell, Mike Smith, a lot of goaltenders who are not paid $10 million. Just want to throw out a little tidbit in there. Kind of puts in perspective how close Toronto is, that it took Tampa seven games to take out the Leafs. The next round, they swept the Panthers, the President's Trophy winners. I'm just saying, puts it in perspective, and I feel like your mindset as a Leaf and Panthers fans might have to switch based on these results. And if you're a fan of the Tampa Bay Lightning, congratulations. You don't know what losing is like anymore. All right, I want to move on here. A couple more series to get to. Let's start here with the Colorado Avalanche and the St. Louis Blues. So the Avs, after going down 1-0 in game four, they come out and double up the St. Louis Blues by a score of 6-3. But the score of this game is not the main story coming out of the series. The main story is that in game three, Nazem Kadri was driving the net, tried to get a loose puck, and ran into goaltender Jordan Binnington. He did not play, by the way, in game four. And, you know, Nazem Kadri has had a bit of a reputation in the postseason for being physical, being on edge, and causing some problems before. It was one of the reasons why, unfortunately, he was shipped out of Toronto. You know, two straight series he was suspended from, and it really hurt his team. But after this, a series of racial slurs and death threats came his way. And not only is Colorado aware of it, they have gotten the police and investigative individuals on this to try and scope out these people who have done these horrible things. So what does Nazem Kadri go out and do in game four for the Avs? He scores a hat trick.
Heavy forecheck here. Shot from Kadri, and it's a hat trick for Nazem Kadri as the Colorado Avalanche are now up by two in the third period.
And the Avalanche now have a stranglehold on the series, 3-1, and return home to possibly close it out on home ice. You know what's frustrating about this? You know what, Nazem Kadri has a quote reputation. You know who else has a reputation? Milan Lucic. You know who else has a reputation? Tom Wilson. You know who else has a reputation? Zach Kassian. None of those players. I mean, Milan Lucic, we didn't even talk about this. Milan Lucic ran Mike Smith, literally, body checked him behind the net. No discipline, no suspension, no racial slurs, no death threats. Can you imagine if Kadri ran Binnington behind the net? That one was more on purpose, the Lucic one. But no, none of those guys get it. This response from Kadri, by the way, shows me the maturity that he has unfortunately had to go through in the most unfortunate way, really. There's not really another way to talk about it. He's learned through multiple suspensions based on his name, his background, even though he is Canadian. Nazem Kadri is not Tom Wilson. It's not Milan Lucic. It's not Zach. And he has had to do a lot of growing up. And it's definitely bettered him as a person. He's a much better person than me. Probably a better person than you as well. But he's certainly a better person than anybody who goes out of their way to make death threats and racial slurs to a guy playing hockey. We need to remember this. It's a game. We get caught up in the emotions of the playoffs. We want to root for our team, cheer for our team. It's a game, guys. And it is so awful that anyone has to go through that. But it shows Kadri's ability to... it's unfortunate that he's had to show this ability. But he has dealt with this his whole life. And the maturity of going out onto the ice and taking out his frustration on the scoreboard instead of on someone's head or doing something irrational or childish shows the maturity in how he deals with this now versus how he would have dealt with it. And good for Kadri. And which is why I'm rooting for Colorado. I'm rooting for Kadri. Because you want to root for a story like that. And you don't want to root for the coach of the St. Louis Blues who went out and said that he just look at Kadri's reputation. Look what he's done in the past. That's all I've got to say. And doesn't immediately this instance happens all the time, but because it's Kadri, he went out and said those things. Now, maybe he would have said them regardless, but I like to think that that's the way Kadri went about it. And first career playoff hat trick, 4 points in game four. Colorado leads the series 3-1. They have a chance to close it out at home. And good for them. Good for Kadri. Good for the Avs. You know, the Blues tried to come out and make their presence felt, but you know, the Avs are a wagon. There's a reason that they're one of the favorites. And, you know, they were coming at him. They were coming at him for really no reason. I mean, Kadri was just trying to go about and play his game. I'm watching a highlight right now of Kadri. Braden Schenn's on him. He's taking late unnecessary hits from Pavel Buchnevich and taking shots in the back from David Perron. And nothing got called, by the way, either. Which is just even more hilarious. And why even more it's better that he came out and had a hat trick in this game. The Avs are winning, and I like to root on the side that's not racist. And I think a lot of people have made that switch as well. All right, and the final series we're going to break down here is the Carolina Hurricanes and the New York Rangers. Now, Carolina, after going up 2-0, similarly to their series against the Bruins, still have a lead, but 2-1 as the Rangers cut into that lead, winning their last game at home 3-1. My takeaway from the series is it's been exactly what I thought it was going to be. Low scoring. Carolina's won both games at home, 2-1 and 2-0. Rangers come back home, win their game 3-1. Probably going to win tonight as well because they play again. Carolina, like I've said, going into the series, I thought Carolina was going to win in 7. And I thought each team would win their home games. Carolina is the one team in these playoffs where home ice advantage has mattered so much more than any other team. It's mattered more to them than the Avalanche. It's mattered more to them than Tampa, than Florida. Anybody. Carolina at home is a nightmare to play against. They feed off that crowd, and that's what home ice advantage is. And they cannot win a game on the road. And that is why the further that they go, they better hope that every team that they play, they had a higher points percentage then so that they have home ice advantage. Because that's the only way they're going to keep winning. They cannot win. They are literally 0-4 or 0-4 on the road. And they're, what are they? They've played 6 home games. They're 6-0 at home, and they're 0-4 on the road, and they got another road game today. But that's what you get, though. For the Rangers, you know, these problems were there against Pittsburgh, and they haven't left yet. Now, they did win their last game. And Igor Shesterkin has been much better in this series than he was in the Penguins series. But the Rangers, man, I mean, you want to talk about, like, yeah, they won their last game, but firepower-wise, I mean, you got Panarin, you've got Zibanejad, and you've got Kreider, and they've all been relatively good. Like, Panarin's got 8 points in 10 games. Zibanejad scored a big goal last game. He's got 13 points in 10 games. He's actually been great in the playoffs. But for the Rangers, if I play Carolina, all I'm saying is steal one on the road. Just steal one game on the road. Find a way to win one in Carolina. And then take care of home ice. Carolina is a much better team on the road than they are, and they're at home than they are on the road. And if you can take one game, like if the Rangers win tonight, they tie that series at 2. Take game 5 on the road. That's your opportunity. Because then you come back home, MSG's rocking game 6. You can close that thing out. Carolina has yet to win a game on the road, but they've yet to lose at home. So for the Rangers, take care of business at home tonight. Try to find a way to win game 5, however that may be, and then finish it off. Easier said than done, sorry. But that's my takeaway from this. Carolina, keep doing your thing, and maybe your road path will pave the way. Now, I got to acknowledge and give the Carolina Hurricanes some credit here. They have been doing this without Frederik Andersen, a goaltender that is basically up for the Vezina Trophy this year. Antti Raanta has come in. He has started every game in the postseason. Listen, he's been spectacular. 1.86 goals against, .939 save percentage. He's 5-3. He's been great. And, like, a lot of people scratched their heads when Carolina made their big goaltending change. They had the combination of, was it Peter Mrazek last year and somebody else? I forget who else their other goaltender was last year. Oh, it was James Reimer. James Reimer and Peter Mrazek. They went out. They got Frederik Andersen, who was an upgrade over both those two, and then Antti Raanta. And they kind of split them down the middle throughout the course of the season. Freddie playing a little bit more, 52 games. Raanta starting 28. But with Freddie down, everyone was like, all right, let's see if Raanta was the right call. Or maybe they would have kept Reimer or Mrazek. And as we saw in the regular season, and now more than ever in the playoffs, Antti Raanta was the right guy. And Antti Raanta is playing exceptionally well. Now, mind you, Carolina is a very good defensive team. We knew that every game in this series was going to be low scoring. But you still got to give some credit to where credit is due. And that is where Antti Raanta's play has come in. He's been awesome. But moral here, if I'm the Rangers, find a way to win one on the road, because at this point you have to. Take care of business at home. And if I'm Carolina, it doesn't matter. Keep taking care of your business at home and you're going to be fine. But you might need to figure out how to play on the road, because God forbid you run into Tampa Bay, who can win on the road. Or if you make it to the finals and you got to play a Colorado who has home ice advantage in that series, if they played, you got to find a way to win. So it's the series has gone exactly as I expected. It's been fun. And there's the whole Tony DeAngelo storyline too. And, you know, the Rangers head coach, Gerard Gallant, talking about the chippiness and the shots that Carolina's taken. Meanwhile, and there's like a screenshot on Twitter of the Rangers just taking cheap shots at Crosby and Malkin and Letang and their first round series. So like, it goes both ways. You know what I mean? So it's gone exactly as I thought. My prediction stays the same. Carolina in seven, because every team at home wins in this series and every series that Carolina's played so far. So I expect that to be the same moving forward. A couple other news stories to get to here. The Penguins general manager Ron Hextall wants to find a way to keep Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang to stay with the club. He said, in a perfect world, they both retire as a Penguin. They like both their games. They said, in an NHL salary cap era, it's very hard. Perhaps that's why when Hextall was asked what was missing from this season, he said, a little bit more cap space would be great. And listen, every team would like a little bit more cap space, but ultimately that's not how it works. And funny enough, they've made it even harder on themselves as Pittsburgh went out and locked up Mr. Brian Rust to a long-term contract extension, $30 million to be exact. So he is staying with the Pittsburgh Penguins to a tune of a six-year extension worth $30.75 million. That AAV is going to run about $5.125 million. He was pretty fantastic this year. Career-high 58 points. He has averaged 35 goals and 40 assists per 82 games over the last three seasons, primarily playing with Mr. Sidney Crosby. And, you know, Sid's got three more years left on his contract, and they want to make sure that Brian Rust is going to be his running mate for that entire time. So good on the Penguins to do that. Good on Brian Rust. It's a fairly friendly deal, and, you know, it's going to be a guy. The Penguins find these guys within their system. They put them with Sid, and they flourish. They did it with Chris Kunitz and Pascal Dupuis. Chris Kunitz was literally an Olympian for it, and you know, now they're doing it with Jake Gensel and Brian Rust. And honestly, good to pay those guys that are in the system and not just let them go of the open market. They signed Rust probably could have gotten around six, maybe 6.5 in the open market. Takes a little bit of a discount, stays in the Penguins, stays with Sidney Crosby in that front. And then another new story breaking out. The Toronto Maple Leafs re-signing defenseman Mark Giordano. A two-year contract worth a total of $1.6 million. It is an AAV of $800,000. To say this is a team-friendly deal would be an understatement. Apparently, according to a few different analytical sources, Mark Giordano's market on the free agent, I guess, pool would have been roughly between $3 and $3.5 million per season on a two-year deal. He signs for 2 years with an AAV of $800,000. Apparently, in a press conference, he went out and said, it's not a shocker that I want to stay here. I want to win. He said, I think this team can contend based on what we saw in the first round. And apparently during the negotiations as well, he came out and said that he said the offer originally was a 2-year deal with $1 million AAV. He brought it down to 800 grand. It wasn't his agent. It wasn't Dubas. It was him. He wanted the lower money so that the team could use it in other areas to improve their team. And we've seen this with Jason Spezza. We are seeing this now with Mark Giordano. And Mark Giordano, by the way, has a lot left in the tank. He was fantastic this season and actually put up quite a few points with the Maple Leafs. And he is very much, he had 35 points in 75 games this season between the Leafs and the Kraken. They also, They got Colin Blackwell in that trade as well for a couple seconds and a third. He has very strong underlying numbers, specifically in the defensive end. And like, he's coming off his last deal with an AAV of 6.75. He's earned nearly $70 million. but these seasons will take him through for age 39 and age 40. So maybe he's understanding he's kind of on the back end. But remember, at age 35, he posted 74 points and he won the Norris Trophy. And, you know, this kind of signals what's going to happen in Toronto, because on the defensive end, Toronto was locked up Jared Anno, Morgan Riley, Jake Muzzin, TJ Brody, Justin Hall, and then Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren are restricted free agents. Ilya Lyubushkin is a UFA, so they kind of figure out what to do there. Maybe a trade happens to free up some cap. Maybe they bring back Lyubushkin. We don't know at this point, but nevertheless, great move by the Leafs. Very team-friendly Mark Giordano, and the Leafs offseason already off to a good start. All right, that is it for the show today. Thank you very much for listening. As always, follow along on Instagram and Twitter at ST Hockey Podcast. Wherever you get your podcasts, whether it is Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, just search for the Second Thoughts Hockey Podcast. And listen, enjoy the warm weather. I'm going to be playing around today. Looking forward to it. That's why I'm recording a little bit earlier than usual. Enjoy the remainder of the second round. We will have our final two matchups, possibly by the next time we record this podcast. We know Tampa Bay is there. We don't know who they're playing. Colorado's on the verge. Are they going to be playing the Oilers? Are the Flames going to come back? I'm looking forward to it. Enjoy. Until then, we'll see you next Tuesday. That's a wrap.